Well, hello, and a very warm welcome back to the Andrew Eborn Show with me, Andrew Eborn, and one of my favourite bits, a pair of briefs. I'm joined again by Stephen Barrett. How are you, Stephen?
Knackered and still very upset about Southport.
It's been horrendous. It's been all over the news. You and I have been on, as always, more platforms than Paddington, trying to unpack the case, but also the legal questions that have arisen. Axel Rudakabana, an 18-year-old from Banks in Lancashire, was convicted of the murder of three young girls during a Taylor Swift-themed dance class in Southport on July the 29th, 2024. Talk us through the evidence was harrowing. Give us a summary of the case, Stephen.
So he obviously planned all this. There is evidence that he doesn't like whiteness and wants to be decolonial. And there is evidence that he wanted to hurt children in particular. He got a taxi from his house and took a knife he purpose bought, and he got into the dance hall. The taxi driver, he didn't pay the taxi driver, so the taxi driver chased him, but then the taxi driver saw the knife and seems to have run away. Not terribly helpful, but there we are. It is at all times Axel Rudakabana who did this, not anybody else, and not as the Home Secretary is desperately trying to pretend Amazon or Elon or anybody else.
Yeah,
This is.
I mean, it is rubbish that. I mean, so the accusation there was because he bought the knife off Amazon website, it's Amazon's fault. Well, you can buy all sorts of things. You can buy a car in a car showroom. And if you run somebody over with that car, it's not the car showroom's fault that you bought it.
No, it's just pathetic. But this is what the left are now. I mean, I despair for genuine left-wing people because this is a joke. You know, I mean, this is just pathetic. They are just so unable to blame to speak truth that they just have to create false lies. I've now started saying that basically they're just looking for witches, and that's where we'll be next. The
Yeah,
next
well,
time.
I think it's also important that, and this is where they're having a high look at all these sort of things. It's just been introduced now about age verification for certain things from Amazon, and they're using AI to do that. But the reality is, it's not the availability of that sort of stuff. It's the criminal mind and what might have driven people to that sort of stuff, and all of that's coming out now because the evidence suggests that actually he called out for help himself, saying, and nobody helped him. What's your view on that?
There are massive state failures here, and we must uncover them all. I really want to know who's going to do the inquiry, and I want the inquiry done really quick because some of it's absolutely obvious. I mean, it just is. And there's no contempt of court for inquiry, so there'll be no reason for anybody to shut up or hold their peace anymore. There never really was a need because it was unavoidable that he did this. So if the judge, and now that people have seen Mr. Justice Goose and how muscular he is, you and I know how muscular British judges are. Keir Starmer's hysterical pretense that if one of us had sent a tweet saying something, or if he'd admitted this was terrorism earlier, it would have derailed the trial. It's like there is no way Mr. Justice Goose would have ruled that anything had prejudiced the trial. He would have just gone, nope, because there's direct evidence he did it. He was found on the scene. You are not going to say
So
such a trial is
let's
prejudice.
unpack that because I say you and I get fired with the same sort of questions every single day, and they sort of turn around and so we talk about contempt of court, and the general proposition is that everybody's entitled to be presumed innocent until proven guilty, and the fact that you can't comment on a pending case is that it might prejudice that case. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, I think that's perfect. It doesn't really exist in my world or even in our world because we're from the commercial world and all of our cases go before a trial where the judge is in charge of fact and law. But it applies, so, and nobody would, and all of our judges are like Mr. Justice Goose, whether they're male or female. In fact, a lot of the female ones are even tougher and better. Our judges, there's no way they're going to be prejudiced by anything. So it's just rubbish. It doesn't. So contempt, of course, is only theoretical in our
Yes.
world.
But
In the
I think it's important. I think because it puts
Yes.
into perspective that that's why they can't say certain things. But if you do that, it's got to apply both ways because people basically try to fill a vacuum. And if you don't get information out there and you come ahead and say, well, it's nothing to do with terrorism and so on and so forth, and you don't give people whatever facts or explain it properly about communication, then they will fill that vacuum. And that's what's part of the problem about the unrest. The facts of the matter is that he was born in Cardiff. He to Rwandan immigrant parents. He moved to Banks near Southport after spending some time in Cardiff, and he had a history of behavioral issues.
Yes, and if you'd said any of that, you would not have prejudiced a trial. So we have these rules because juries can be prejudiced, and we must make sure that they aren't. Somebody like Mr. Justice Gies was the perfect person to do this trial because he would have taken that jury. If there'd been a jury, he would have taken them very much in hand, and he would have reminded them every day, "Don't you look at Facebook? Don't you look at Twitter?" And he would no doubt have called out anybody he found who'd done it. We arrested and sent down a jury member who did it. Once, so we have, and I don't actually think that derailed that trial. I think we still managed to rescue the trial, which is what Mr. Justice Goose would have done at any cost. And I simply do not believe that man would have ever allowed that trial to be prejudiced. So the Prime Minister was simply using these to, he's using fear to silence people because that's what he does.
Well, the accusation, Stephen, as well, and this is what was put, and many people are very vocal about it. They say that Keir Starmer lied. What's your take on that?
He clearly lied when he said that you can't call things terrorism because it'll prejudice a trial. So that is the easiest and clearest example of what we would call a lie, which is a statement which is made, which is false, which you make knowing to be false. And the reason we can assume Starmer knows that to be false is because he is a very senior lawyer. So, if I had said that, I would have but had to lie to say that. If somebody had asked me, Stephen, is calling saying that this was a terrorist offence going to prejudice that trial? And I said, yes, I'd be a liar. And because I'm not a liar, I would always say no. And that's the most obvious one that the Prime Minister did. And the reason we know that even he knows is because he didn't say it in August, but he did say it in October. And he knew in August, he knew in July, but he didn't say until October. The trial was in the next January. So if it prejudices the trial to say that it's a terrorist offence, then he said it in October. So the whole thing is just an absolute joke. I love the way Mr. Justice Goose dealt with this because they wrap themselves up in knots arguing that what happened could not possibly be deemed terrorism under the definition of terrorism.
Yes,
And
yes.
there's two different concepts I need people to focus on. And this might be conceptually tricky. There's one legal definition of terrorism, technical definition, and then there's terrorism. And what the judge did rather neatly was go, I have to, when the CPS tell me it doesn't meet the test for terrorism, I have to accept that. Which, as you and I know with the judge, is very much if I didn't have to, I can point out that they're idiots. But anyway, he's quite right. If the defence obviously don't challenge it because it's in their interest. So if it's put to a judge and the defence don't challenge it, the judge is actually right. If you two idiots have agreed, prosecution and defence, then I am bound by your stupid agreement, which is just a procedural aspect of our trial system. But that's what. So when the judge says, I have to accept that is not. I love this. It's not, I'm happy with this. It's not, this
Yes.
is what I think. It's, I have to accept
So
this.
let's look at the words that Mr. Justice Goose used. He said the prosecution have made it clear that these proceedings were not acts of terrorism within the meaning of the terrorism legislation because there is no evidence that Ruda Cabana purpose was to advance a political, religious, racial, or ideological cause. He went on to point out, however, that his culpability for this extreme level of violence is equivalent in its seriousness to terrorist murders, whatever his purpose. Whether his motivation was for terrorism or not misses the point. What he did on the 29th of July last year has caused such shock and revulsion to the whole nation that it must be weighed as being at the extreme level of crime. His culpability and the harm he caused and intended were at the highest.
Yes, and that's why we all adore Mr. Justice Goose. And he did it for the families. He's saying, I'm taking it as seriously as if it was terrorism. And I don't give a toss about the technical definition. Actually, it sounds to me, Andrew, as though the technical definition is broken. I was listening to one expert who was saying that apparently in most European states they use the same definition, which sets off a little alarm bell in Stephen's head, saying, "Did the EU draft this?" And if the definition is widely used and widely broken, maybe we should redefine what terrorism is
Yeah,
so that it
and I think it's
captures
also
things like
important for
this.
people. The other question we get asked is, well, why is it important that it's defined as terrorism? Well, the sentences tend to be a bit higher if it's terrorism. Obviously, if it's a life sentence, we'll come on to that in a bit, but it tends to be higher if terrorism is involved. Why is that?
Because terrorism is a worse wrong. And what we're always trying to do as a society, and this is why I don't like lawyers pushing ordinary people away from these issues. I think we all have to, everyone as a society has to come in together and say their piece on what they think is right or wrong. And whether rape is worse than murder or murder is worse than rape is a really difficult question. It's a political question fundamentally, and it's for everyone. It's not for us as lawyers to go, "We've decided, therefore you must accept." That's not how society is. We're a democracy, and we all came together, or at least I think there is a general consensus that terrorism makes things worse. And if we change our mind, and if we start as a human society going, "Do you know what? Terrorism's a jolly good thing." And I'm not sure, obviously, I don't think we would, or anybody ever, who's decent enough to watch this ever would, but I think there are some loons who probably would. And if there were ever enough loons, then they could get their way, and that's democracy, and I have to accept that. But it's right that we all come together and we all consider what makes crimes worse or less bad,
And
where
it's
they
very
all
different,
sit.
and I'm always keen, and this is what I love about our little episodes here on A Pair of Briefs. I'm always keen to sort of explain the law and so on and so forth. People all say, "So what's the price of a life?" And it always sort of desensitizes people when you say, "Well, there's a tariff, and if you do this, if you're a CEO of a big corporation, you're worth more than the cleaner in that corporation." And we had that about 9/11 and so on and so forth, and the terrible situation there. But there is that tariff and so on and so forth, and it's trying to unpack what the meaning is. What's your take on that?
It's something we have to do. It's one of the things that makes lawyers quite soulless. And I always fight the idea that we're moral creatures. I don't like that. So I never wanted to go on social media or be visible. And for years and years and years, I avoided it. And a certain type of other lawyer was very, very prominent. And they immediately went for, "Lawyers are brilliant. Lawyers are holy. Lawyers are heroes." One of them still has, they just have such a ridiculously high opinion of themselves because they're lawyers. I think it's a really bad idea because we do things like this. I mean, I remember in my pupillage. So back then, I was doing my first pupil master did a lot more common law and taught and stuff. So I was introduced to this thing I'd not seen before called Kemp and Kemp. And
Yes.
Kemp and Kemp is a loose leaf. It's yellow and it's multi-volume. I don't know whether it still exists, but you can spend. I just got absolutely fascinated by Kemp and Kemp in the library at the Middle Temple because it lists a price for every injury.
No, that's right. You lose a leg, you lose an eye, you lose a
Exactly,
toenail.
and it's all got a bracelet. And I just remember looking, left hand thumb back then, Andrew, was 4 to 6,000 pounds. And I just remember thinking, I'd rather have my thumb.
Yeah, well,
It was.
and isn't that the point? And I know you and I we speak about these things, and so often the lawyers, what they make a mistake, and journalists do as well sometimes, is we get desensitized to these facts and figures and so on and so forth. What will never happen, never happen, is to compensate for the loss of life, for the trauma that people were put through on that day.
Yes, and that's why things like this are evil. It's why I prefer it when we all come together. I wish if the Prime Minister had had an ounce of human decency, which many Labour politicians do. I really like to stress this. Then I think we would have called for a day of national mourning. I think we would have all come together. I think he would have hugged. There were a lot of grandparents and parents around who he could have hugged. A lot of he got heckled by somebody. I can't break a confidence, but somebody directly connected to one of the injured children, and this is, that's he just and he ran away to a. We now discover to a party with minor celebs. I mean, just that's. I mean, it's the likes of you and me, Andrew. I mean, that would just be. We don't need a party. Thank you, Prime Minister. Go look after those kids. You utter bollard. But he doesn't understand collective grief, and he doesn't seem to understand that you can't put a monetary value on these things. Therefore, you have to put a higher value on them, which is for us all to come together and feel things and deal with our emotions. I really think he's causative. of what they like to call the riots. I don't like to call them the riots because the Riot Act wasn't actually read. So I don't think they are technically right. But that's just me being me. It's this difference I've been explaining recently, and I'm going to do more on it, explaining equity. And because I'm an equity lawyer, Andrew, and you know what I'm about to say, is the common law is all about rules and just following rules like a computer. And yes, it's great 99% of the time, that's absolutely great. But we have this thing called equity because 1% of the time it isn't enough. And you need to do the opposite of what the rules say because it's just the right thing. And people don't need to know anything more about equity than that. I'll do a podcast on it if they want to get on top of equity. But that basically is at the core of what we're doing. We recognize that sometimes just doing what the rules say isn't enough. And that doesn't mean you purposely break rules or do bad things, but it means that sometimes you have to do extra. And this was clearly an event where extra was required, way more than 19 seconds to lay down a plastic wreath. You know, this is just no.
Yeah, no,
And he doesn't get it.
you're absolutely right, and it's how and the ability to communicate what the law says, because the law is supposed to be a formula, and we'll come on to sentencing in a bit, but it's supposed to be a formula. People unpack it, and I always say trust comes in on foot but leaves on horseback, and trust in the media, trust in politicians, trust in law has sometimes been at an all-time low, which is why we need to look at these things and unpack it. But going back to what has now been revealed, and let's look at the contempt of court side. We talk about he had a history of behavioural issues, including anxiety, social isolation. He was known to the local services due to these challenges, and he was also excluded from school after reports of racial bullying and bringing a knife to school for protection. How much of that could have been disclosed before the trial?
Well, quite a degree of it. Nothing could be disclosed if Mr. Justice Goose thought it would change the mind of a jury. But I don't believe there is much that Mr. Justice Goose thought would change the mind of a jury. I just fundamentally don't. I have more faith in our judges than I have in Keir Starmer. You
Yeah.
know, I just don't believe he would have on any, not because I didn't get through the factual summary, but just, and that's because I don't want to. Because it's just horrendous. And those poor girls and their families, and my heart is with them always. My heart is particularly with a young lady called Leanne, Andrew, because I mean, I always thought she was amazing and a hero. And I went on in the morning and I praised her. And another guy called John who got stabbed. There's a lady called Heidi who protected a child in the loo. And there are two window cleaners whose names I can't remember because I'm rubbish. But they also, you know, they are in Barrett's hierarchy of people I would absolutely, you know, stand up for. If you enter a room, I have the highest respect for you. So I always had the highest respect for Leanne, who got stabbed protecting a child. That's just, there's nobody else. I don't need to know anything else about anybody. Even Captain Tom, I would ask to stand for her. You know, that's just what you do. But my heart broke for a second time on Thursday, Andrew, when her victim impact statement was read in court and she blames herself.
Yeah,
She's lost her job. She can't leave the
it was
house. She
that
blames
absolutely
herself.
harrowing. The circumstances, the facts, which are, I mean, they are harrowing. We don't need to go into all the details of those because it's more about principle. I mean, it is horrendous, absolutely horrendous, hearing those victim impact statements and so on and so forth, and the details that emerge, seeing some of the videos and the trauma caused. The headlines are he was charged with 3 counts of murder, 10 counts of attempted murder, possession of a knife, production of the biological toxin ricin, and possession of terrorist material. Now, the way that they looked at that sort of stuff, the attack was described just as a headline, as sadistic and premeditated. And all of those go into the sentencing side. I want to just unpack a couple of things, first of all, is that the judge made it very clear that had he been 18, he would have got a whole life sentence. Effectively, he was what I think 9 days off
Nine.
being 18, and therefore he got life plus a recommended period of time. It ended up 52 years. Talk to us about firstly what that principle is and your views on it.
So I think the principle is stupid. I don't think it's in any way consistent with our current age laws. So you can be 16 and you can have sex. You can be 16, you can't buy tobacco. You can be 16 and you can join the army and get married. You can be 16 and you can't buy beer. We're not consistent on any level. I don't think these people want us to be consistent. And when they talk about lowering the voting age, I want people to know it's very unlikely to be about respecting 16-year-olds, and much more likely to be about the idea of devaluing voting. They really hate voting and they just want to mock it and deride it. So they want to make it as unimportant as possible. Fight back by realizing voting is incredibly important and incredibly powerful. And using your vote, always vote. That is the best way to fight back against these awful people. But the principle is stupid. The principle would have been known to Keir Starmer from the day of the stabbing because he's one of our most senior criminal lawyers. So the idea he didn't know is ridiculous. He's surrounded by government lawyers who would have immediately pointed it out. Oh, by the way, Prime Minister, if he gets found guilty, there's this issue. The Prime Minister therefore had from July to correct this. If I'd been Prime Minister, I would have used my massive majority to simply
Yes.
pass a rule correcting this and applying it retrospectively. So saying, the law is changing from this date when I finally got my. So they were in recess. You get the MPs back, what, September, October? You'd say if the law, this law change applies to any offence that was committed on or before the 1st of January 2024. And you can do that. We do that in tax law all the time. A number of human rights lawyers would have screamed blue murder and thrown their toys out the pram and beat their fists upon the ground. And I would have gone, I don't care. If I was Prime Minister, I just would have gone, oh dear, you scream and scream until you make yourself sick. But I'm not going to listen to you because it's perfectly lawful. Even if they challenged it in court, it would have got through. And that's what I would have done to correct this problem. It's because I'm an equity lawyer fundamentally that I want to correct the problem because he's benefiting from a technicality. And nobody hates technicalities more than equity lawyers. It probably sounds odd for your viewers and listeners to hear this, but there's a type of lawyer who learns all the technicalities and then learns equity and then goes, do you know what? This is better. Yeah, screw the technical. 99% of the time, I always say, common law, fine. But there are cases that are just so extreme. And this is where I would have used my power. This is where the Prime Minister could have used his massive powers. If he'd used his powers to do this, I would have supported him in the press. I'd have written in The Spectator. I'd have gone on the telly. So, the Prime Minister cannot say nobody would have backed me up. It's like, well, I would have
Well,
done.
I think the whole nation would have backed him up on this sort of thing. There has to be, and Mr. Justice Goose was he said normally, and he was surprised. He would have much preferred to say it's a whole life sentence. He effectively said, just to be clear on this, even though it's 52 years, that's a minimum, and the likelihood of being let out on that. But just to put that in
Yeah, he didn't. I think
perspective.
we should flag that to people. Mr. Another reason I adore Mr. Justice Coote. And I've become this man's biggest fan. It's probably quite
Yes.
creepy for his family. But another reason I absolutely adore him is he didn't have to say anything about that.
No.
And he did. So, because he knows that at any future parole hearing, that will get read out. And so he's literally thinking in 52 years' time, when the heads are trying to get him out,
Yeah.
I want this read out at a parole hearing.
And it's absolutely right. And people always, and again, this is why it's so important to look at this, because people always blame the judges for being too lenient or whatever. They can only operate in accordance with the law.
They are very, very, very restricted. It's one of the many reasons I don't like criminal law. One of the main reasons I don't want to be a criminal lawyer, and I definitely never want to be a criminal judge. Because you think about it, for our judges, they get to control law and fact, as I've said. Criminal judges only get to control law. It's like that's half the job. I'd feel half as powerful. I wouldn't want to be a criminal judge. But they are massively constrained. Crime as an area is massively constrained by it's where the politicians meddle the most. And not only this stupid law was made in 2022, and it was changed from a law that had been made a few years earlier, which had changed a law which had been made a few years earlier. They're changing it all the bloody time. It's
Yeah.
mental
And
crime.
in 2022, we had our first case in July 2022 of the televising of basically sentencing, and that was to restore trust in the justice system so people could understand. So it's not just the little sound bites that you have in the media summarizing what could be weeks or months of evidence, summarizing, oh, this judge gave them that. It really was to try and understand it. So talk a little bit about the tariff and how that works, because the sentencing guidelines are very clear. It's supposed to be a science, not an art, and therefore the area of discretion is supposed to be almost eliminated. Any judge should basically reach the same decision. Talk a little bit about that.
Let me just do something, which is I hate talking on criminal law, not least because every time I do, I get piled on by lefty lawyers and told, "Oh, you're not a criminal lawyer. You don't get to talk about criminal law." Despite the fact that, as you and I well know, criminal law is taught in term one of year one of most law
And we
degrees.
all do it as
We
baby
can all,
barristers. I've done criminal law and helped all sorts of people make sure they navigate that sort of side. But as a principal, while you're digging it up, let me help out with a
No,
question.
I've got it now. But I just want to flag up, Andrew. My first ever court appearance was in the Court of Appeal, Criminal Division.
Ah.
So I just every time they go, "You're not a criminal lawyer. You don't get to talk about it." It's like, well, I've been to the bloody Court of Appeal in crime. So screw you guys. But
Yes.
anyway, I've got my note now, and I had this done by a very clever criminal lawyer. That's brilliantly set out. It's only 2 pages long, which is how you tell a good lawyer, because a lefty would have written 40. But they let me tell you. So the maximum tariff, it's Schedule 21 of the Sentencing Act 2020, and that was amended in 2022. So that's why I say 2022, but it's technically the Sentencing Act 2020. It's Schedule 21. The aggravating and mitigating factors relevant to the case were set out by the judge in a very set out way. This is what it was always going to be an exceptional case, and that's what it calls it. Interestingly, it calls it, this is called detention at His Majesty's pleasure. And that's what he gets rather than the other one's called the whole life tariff. This is the detention at His Majesty's pleasure, which I always just thought that's what crime was anyway. I mean, that when you watch the opening of Porridge, that's what they always said. But anyway, don't suppose it really matters. The starting point for exceptional cases is 27,
Yes.
which is why when I went through the factors that I was aware of, I thought it would be around 34 years. So I thought it would be higher than the starting point, but I didn't think it would be that much higher. But having heard, because I have heard it all, and I don't know how much, there's a balance, and you can be extremist either way. You can be extremist by not sharing facts, and you can be extremist and sharing facts. And the bollard can't navigate that balance because he can't deal with anything that requires, humanity. But I think there are what you do is you just highlight certain things. One of the little girls who died was stabbed 122 times. Now, if you know a little girl, and I've been into primary schools and read to children, I don't know how you stab, just practically how you stab. So that's just horrible. That's beyond horrible. The coroner concluded he attempted to decapitate one of the girls. The thing that most horrifies me, because at least those angels had passed, and at least they were already in the care of God, so at least I take comfort in that, and I challenge anybody. I that's my religion. The one that most horrifies me is a little girl got stabbed. A little girl got out the door, and he grabbed her and pulled her back in, and stabbed her a bit more, and thank God, she survived. She is one of the survivors. So we don't know her name, and all of the survivors should be and are rightfully anonymous. But things like that, if you needed to question, is this man evil? Then those three examples, I think, are enough to say yes. Poor Leanne, I think, lost her lung protecting a child. What a marvelous woman and poor Leanne is sat at home. I hope she doesn't watch media and get, or if she does, we'll just know that our hearts are with her. But, she sits at home blaming herself. He's evil. Evil. She's hero.
Yeah,
So, yes, if
and I
people.
think, well, there's a couple of things there, isn't there? It's the behaviour that's evil, and there's all sorts of questions, and people have pointed out to me as well that when he called out for help, when he made those phone calls that he did earlier on, a few years ago, saying, "Look, I'm feeling so angry about things, I want to murder somebody." What should have been done at that stage? Because prevention is better than cure, and if people messed up, that's what we need to look at as well. So undoubtedly, the behaviour is evil. What's happened? The circumstances are absolutely horrendous. And as you say, that goes in. So when they're looking at the tariffs, they're saying, "Look, this is your normal starting point." You get aggravating factors, and you've mentioned those which push it up, and mitigating factors which push it down, and that looks on that sort of basis. The other factor, and again we can unpack this briefly, is the not guilty plea, which traditionally saves people having to go through all the aggravation of a trial, reliving it, and so on and so forth. And the judge in his judgment, actually gave about 3 years discount on the sentence, is what it sort of worked out at. But basically, he initially pleaded not guilty, but later changed his plea to guilty. What's your take on that?
So that's the only time I disagree with Mr. Justice Goose. And what would happen in Mr. Justice Goose's defense? He would sit me down and he would say, Stephen, if I hadn't given the discount, and it's a tiny discount. So look, that I thought it had to be around 10%, but it looks as though actually it was around 5%. So what a very small discount on 52. But what Mr. Justice Goose would no doubt say to me is, look, Stephen, if I hadn't given that discount, that would be an automatic, they'd appeal on that point. And if the appeal court disagreed with me, then the sentence is going to get reduced. And do you want to put the family through the pain of that? And I would say, no, Mr. Justice Goose, you're right. You were correct to give the discount. I was so angry that I didn't want him to give the discount because I know of what was going on in terms of where those families were. When they found out he pleaded guilty, he changed his plea. But because he didn't plead guilty, he forced them to be effectively re-traumatized, because you have, if you're going to go on trial, and every witness who's giving evidence, always in their head, they think they're going to give evidence on the first day. I mean, they wouldn't. A lot of them wouldn't have given evidence for weeks, but that's just not, again, I'm not the human bollard, so I know what actually happens is every single witness thinks they're going to give evidence on the first day. So every single witness has a sleepless night. Every single witness relives it in their head. I mean, I've had experiences, Andrew, I don't mind saying this because it's not a betrayal and I'm not identifying anybody, but I've had an experience in a very traumatic case. It was a care case. It's not the type of thing I normally do, and the reasons why I was basically this man trusted me and got quite upset and wouldn't trust anybody else, and so we had to explain I wasn't actually qualified in this area of law, but he waived all his rights, and I had an experience where we were in trial, and what the family lawyers called a fact finding, because they can't use words like trial. Family lawyers always have to wear cardigans and hug everyone. In fairness, they do deal with some pretty traumatic stuff. But we were in trial over these children, and I was dreaming my cross-examination, as I tend to do. And I woke was woken up by a phone call from the solicitor to tell me that my client had died in the night. And I have no doubt that that is because of the stress of it all. My client wasn't accused of anything bad. My client just wanted to get his children back and look after them and care for them. He was a thoroughly decent man. I could tell that, immediately. And it's simply the stress of all this killed him.
Right.
And Axel Rudakabana put all those victims and their families through all of that stress. No,
Yes.
that and that takes a stress takes a physical toll on human beings. It's physically destructive to humans. And it's time we all we did know this at the First World War, but the fact was there were too many men traumatized that we couldn't actually afford to deal with it. So the only effective remedy the state could come up with was pretending it didn't exist. And that was the effective remedy to the trauma of the First World War, was to just pretend it doesn't exist. But we did, and that's where it did actually force its way through. It's where the law starts to recognize it, and we start to get terms like shell shocked. That's how I want listeners and viewers to know that's where the law began to understand this, what we called nervous damage, and all these other terms that began to appear, which are probably now, not very PC, but at least was a recognition that we were beginning to understand this. We nowadays should be much more sophisticated and accept that stress physically damages human bodies. And
And I
so.
think that's part of the thing, is that's reason you get a discount on the normal tariff, because you don't have to go through the trial. In this particular case, it was very late in the day. A lot of people are saying, well, that the unfortunate thing that it's not being unpacked in court is that we're not going to get all of the evidence. Well, hopefully with a public inquiry, which I hope will happen very quickly, we'll look at all of that evidence, including his earlier cases. Could we have prevented this by helping him or restricting him earlier, when he made that sort of initial call and saying, I need help, I want to murder somebody. A couple of quick things. He wasn't in court for the sentencing. He caused a lot of disruption there. At the moment, there's no obligation to be in court. People are saying, look, we're going to try and change the law, and if they don't go into court, we might add to the sentence a couple of years or whatever it might be. A lot of people have asked, well, could we have had him in court so he wasn't shouting out? Could we have put a muzzle on him or something on that? What are your views on that?
So the first point is we don't need any new law. So stop it. Everybody saying that is an idiot or has some ulterior agenda, because we don't need one. As Mr. Justice Goose, to his absolute credit, proved. A judge orders somebody into the dock. You can use reasonable force to put them in the dock. Then you get the practical problem that Mr. Justice Goose faced, which is, he's in the dock because I've used my powers.
Yes.
He's chained. He's not a threat to himself or anybody else, but he's screaming.
He's screaming out that he was had some horrible medical condition. He needed help. He needed a paramedic.
Yes. And then you're Mr. Justice Goose, and you have to sit there and you think, well, the family are hearing this. And a lot of the family members, when this happened, so it's perfectly normal. A lot of family members aren't able to look at the person. So actually, when you see them in a trial, in a court, they often just look directly at the judge and they sort of sit quite rigid. I'd probably do that. I don't think I'd be able to look at him. You just don't want to. And a lot of evil people will use the opportunity, if a family member looks at them, to smirk or do something even worse, to just more
Well,
evil.
he said, didn't he? He said he had no regrets. I mean, how devastating is that?
It's worse than that, Andrew. When he was in the police station, the first, and I think some of the only questions he asked was how young was the youngest one, and then he took great pleasure in the fact that she was six, and that's just,
No,
he's just evil.
it is
So you, what you
awful.
face then is the practical problems.
So
He's in the dock and
can
he's
you
screaming.
muzzle them? That's the question.
I think you can, and if you ask me, I think you what you're better off doing is sedating them. I suspect a modern human rights lawyer would say that you can't. And then we'll need to go and ask the office block in Strasbourg whether you can or not.
So
I've
just to
heard
be
that
clear, the
many.
current thing is you can use reasonable force. They're looking at adding to the sentence in a general thing. So all of that needs to be unpacked. But we've got something. Finally, and in the last sort of 30 seconds on this, the Attorney General's office has received a request to reconsider the sentence under the unduly lenient sentence. It's quite a high tariff, quite a high bar to prove it was too lenient. What's your take on that?
I don't think that he should. I would rather let sleeping dogs lie. There are many fine members of the Court of Appeal, but you never know if it goes before one loon. You don't want them reducing this tariff at all, because that's when people, listeners just need to know that when you reopen a criminal sentence, sentences can go down as well as up.
And that's the
So.
problem. They call it the unduly lenient sentence. So they're trying to get it up. That the comments that Mr. Justice Goose made about he thinks he should never be let out, effectively, that should resonate in the patrol board's mind in 52 years' time when they
No,
start
well, what I
considering.
would do, Andrew, because I'm much more sneaky, is I would simply campaign and I'll push for this. I'd like the next government to remove the parole board, return the power to the Home Secretary, because I don't believe, even if the Home Secretary was Yvette Cooper in 52 years, I don't believe she'd let him out. And I think she's awful and rubbish, and I don't trust her with my child. But, I don't think she'd let him out, because she would at least have the nous to go, the public will hate this.
Yeah.
And once that power is, the only people stupid enough to release Axel Rudigabbana are an anonymous committee.
So
So take the
we need
power
to
away from an
look at
anonymous
all of
committee.
that. All of this
Yeah.
we're going to come back to. It will be unpacked, the review into what happened, what didn't happen, who said what, and what they should have said will happen. And we're going to unpack it more here on A Pair of Briefs. Do join us. You can subscribe. Press that subscribe button now. Follow me at Andrew Eborn at Octopus TV. And as always, if you've got any comments on any of the issues raised, do let us know. But for now, Stephen, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you. Bye.